because so many people come in and they want to sound cool and they know the buzzwords and they see a ton of it on Instagram and whatever else. But you really got to help them understand, like, hey, it's cool you know all this stuff, but really this is the low-hanging fruit for you. This is where we have to kind of start making hay.
How about a little staking?
You know, I'm pretty well convinced that staking and some Dew Sweeper TV is all you need to play better golf.
Follow me and Coop. Get you a staycay. Come over to Dew Sweeper TV and let's get your game better.
Get better.
All right, joining me here on the tour, coach, we got a little round table going on here. I'm actually at a round table. And before we get into the instruction, Webb, I've got something you would like. You need a staycay. So do you, Dutro. It is the official THC drink of the Tour Coach podcast and the Dew Sweepers. I think this new transfusion is dynamite, Webb. Next time you and I get a chance to teach together, I think we go all transfusions, all staycay, whole session.
The whole time.
Whole time.
Absolutely. Whole time.
Dutro, there's no telling what you can do with a staycay on a force plate.
I mean, it's got to increase them by at least tenfold, I would think.
I think what we ought to do is some random tests before staycay, after staycay, and see what happens.
I think it would be life-changing results for sure.
Anyways, if you're out there, you're looking for a very refreshing, non-alcoholic, booze-free Delta 9 cocktail, the folks at Staykay have partnered with us here on the Tour Coach and with the Dew Sweepers. And I can tell you this, I've sat and had a couple of these cocktails on that sofa over there. They are delightful. So that's all I got to say about that. So Dutro, most people know you as the force plate guy. Ryan Webb, one of my good friends as well, and a great young up-and-coming teacher. And this discussion between the three of us all started not this December, but the December before at the Golf Magazine Top 100 Summit over at Cabot Citrus Farms. And, you know, you two got together, got talking, and Webb's been fascinated with learning more about it. And I thought we'd all kind of get on there. And I want to start with you, Michael. You travel around a lot. You see golfers of all skill levels. What are some misconceptions? I think that people oftentimes think that force plates and some of that tech only helps tour players or really only needs to be used like in that type of a lesson. I use them all the time.
Same.
With golfers, all skill levels. Webb, I know you do as well. Talk a little bit about why the force plates, why they, you know, what you use and why they can benefit the recreational golfer as much as a tour player that we're trying to get down to the nuts and bolts and nitty gritty. And just share some of your findings that maybe, you know, are a little bit misconstrued or people don't know.
Yeah, well, first off, thank you, Tony, for having me. You've been a mentor of mine. I've looked up to you for a long time, and I'm not just saying that because we're looking at each other through a camera. But I've always appreciated you and your podcast and your creative way of thinking about this. And I'm always happy to talk with my buddy Ryan. He's a great guy. Really enjoyed you connecting us down there at Cabot Citrus Farms. That was awesome. So I enjoyed my time a lot. But getting to your question, you know, I definitely think everybody can benefit from force plates because there's a lot of components to the golf swing that we can't see with the naked eye.
Right.
And when it comes to pressures, forces, torques, you can't visibly see those things. So one of the big things that I kind of enjoy doing is answering simple questions with some drills, if you will. And what I mean by that is most golfers that I work with, if not every golfer I work with, want one of two things. They either want to hit it farther or they want to hit it straighter. And for hitting it farther, what I found is that most people don't load. And when we talk about loading, we're talking about transferring that pressure into the trail side. And the big thing that I see with a lot of people is that they just don't do that, or they do not enough, or it's really late, but they're not getting enough pressure into their trail side. So I think that's something that's super helpful for the force plates. I think that's something you can show people. You can flip the force plates no matter which version you're using of the force plates, but you can flip that into live mode and let people experience what it feels like to get 80% of their pressure into their trail side. Because most people have never done it and they've been told to stay centered and they kind of stack over the ball or whatever the case may be. But getting people to load is a game changer because not only does it help them create more speed, but it also buys them some time. And we've all worked with golfers who talk all the time about how they feel stuck, they don't have enough time, they feel like they're just kind of pulling the handle down, all of those things. But generally speaking, if you don't load pressure into your trail side, which actually helps us create this moment arm that everybody loves to talk about in golf, then
All
it's
right, you
quite
got it. Hold on.
impossible.
You got to
Oh,
explain moment arm to a guy from
boy.
Alabama.
Okay, pretty simple. We
Yeah.
got to
When I
separate
think
this.
moment arm, I think stakeye.
Yeah.
Me grabbing it with my moment arm.
Well, here you go.
What
Me
is
and
a
you
moment
both.
arm?
Me and you both grew up, having to put on used tires on our vehicles because we couldn't afford the new ones. And every now and then you get a flat one. So if you think about taking the bolt off of that thing, if I give you a wrench that's 1 inch long and ask you to take the bolt off your tire, that ain't going to work very good. But if I give you a wrench that's much longer, well, now you can pop that nut right off, put your new tire on, and get down the road. So when we talk about a moment arm in golf, what we're talking about is separating that center of pressure that we all watch go back and forth as players make their golf swings from the center of mass, which is why I think you see so many force plate companies now trying to show center of mass so that we can now measure if we're creating enough of a moment arm for our golfer. But that's essentially what creates speed and time in the golf swing and allows us to have time to deliver the club to the ball without just dumping everything out early and not being able to transfer any of that speed to the ball.
Okay, and last scientific question for at least the next few minutes. What's the difference for people out there listening? Because I think teachers will get it confused. And I think, everybody puts, I put stuff in my own verbiage and all that, but like, what's the difference between center of mass and center of pressure? And like, if I'm looking at my swing catalyst or I'm looking at one of those traces, what is what?
So when you're looking at the force plates and you're looking at the pressure moving back and forth, the pressure shift or the pressure trace is what they call it on swing catalyst. That little dot moving back and forth, that is your center of pressure. So that's essentially how you're moving your mass side to side. But when we talk about center of mass, we're talking about a spot that's a couple inches up from your belt buckle or from your belly button. And that's what we're really talking about with center of mass. So if we were to take our bodies and measure out all the segments and figure out where the exact middle is, that's my center of mass, which is weight. Our center of pressure is where we're moving that mass to. So as we all know, go ahead.
I always talk about, I'm going to do a demonstration here because
Here
I
we
could
go.
use a stakeye. But when I talk about it, and I'm curious, this is more like I do these things as much to learn from folks like you as anything, right? And but like I always talk about winding your sternum or the center of your chest
Yep.
and your rib cage. And as I wind that rib cage back, as it turns, I feel that pressure increase into my trail foot, my right foot. I'm right-handed, right? Is
Absolutely.
that accurate?
Yeah, 100%.
Right. And then I think people get confused. Like if you don't explain the two and they just look at that trace up there, I think they try to move that white dot by sliding, but they never move the center of mass. Is that fairly close? Am I
I think they
halfway?
move the center of mass, they don't move the center of pressure.
Right.
Kind of what you just said. Yeah, I
Right.
100% agree with that. When you ask somebody, and that's why I like the live mode so much, and I use probably the live mode more than anything else to where you show people, because you're absolutely right. If you go, hey, you're not loading enough, they'll just kind of stand on the right foot and kind of shift everything over. But then you can kind of show them that the pressure is really not increasing much. So then you can start teaching them how to kind of push and load with that trail leg versus just trying to fall into it and creating a bunch of unnecessary sway.
Right, and I like that because I think if I like Why I like the live mode a lot as well, and turning them to where they can see the pressure increase. And another thing that I think is real important too is like learning to do it in balance, like not getting way out on your toes, outside your feet, those types of things. Those are things that I see. And then when you use the live mode, heck, one of the greatest things to me with live mode is just letting people figure out how the hell to balance themselves.
Amen. I agree 100%. And going back to club delivery a little bit, because we talked about hitting it farther. Well, how about hitting it straighter? Well, that's where you start looking at those AP forces, that posterior force. Sorry about that. And that's what you're talking about is like this idea of balance, right? Do we want to be more on the toes? Do we want to be more on the heels? And generally, what I've found with a lot of people that have a very steep transition and or downswing, is that they almost have their AP forces backwards. They're trying to go forward with their trail foot and backwards with their lead foot, and that's just going to get everything moving out in front of them and make them steep. So I think that's another one of those things to where we all know and can see that the club's getting steep in transition and causing problems for our players, but why does that happen? And that's kind of what I think the force plates allow us to do, is to understand the cause a lot better than just looking at the effect and trying to change that.
Yeah, I agree. I think most of the I'm gonna get blasted for saying this. So I mean, what the, but like, I think you can fix a lot if you get the club face good. If you get a person set up good and you get the club face square, and you get the club to swing, you know, and then you teach, and then I think from there you can get the club to look how you want by teaching the body to move more effectively and efficiently.
I've made a career. I'm a body coach first. I have been for a long time now. I have to thank Mr. Mike Adams for, you know, getting me to look at the body, because at the time I was a golfing machine guy, and there's nothing wrong with the golfing machine.
No, it's great.
A ton from that. Club geometry is still very, very good with the golfing machine, but I needed to know why the geometry wasn't working, or why the geometry was getting off. And that's what the force plates have really allowed me to do, is to have a deeper understanding of what our body is trying to do during that swing. So I 100% agree with you. I definitely spend the vast majority of my time working with clients on getting the body to move, whether in a better sequence or creating more pressure or whatever it may be, or AP forces. But I'm definitely trying to create a better movement, not just a better golf swing.
But I also think that, like, you see people that look, and I love the geometry of it, right? And there's plenty of the geometry police out there.
Absolutely.
Right? But like, you can make it look like it's in the right spot with your arms and your hands going slow, but then you get on the golf course and it not work, right? Or from a camera view, you can make it look like it's getting on the plane or it's less steep from the outside. But if you don't fix why it's from the outside, you know, you're not, to me, you're not going to have long lasting improvement. And it's going to for sure be a lot as harder, a lot.
Well, I think it's hard too. You've taught more lessons than probably Ryan and myself put together, Tony. And, you know, we've all been there, but it, you know, we've all been there with a client, and I feel like my job as a coach is to make my clients uncomfortable, because that's when change occurs. But if you're trying to shake that monkey tree a bit and you're getting them uncomfortable and creating a new motion, the benefit of the force plates is we can actually look at this and go, you're actually making a better movement. We just haven't matched up the club delivery to the new movement. And that's where the magic really happens for me is, you know, like you said, I think that if we can do some really basic things with the actual golf swing, but then put a pretty good movement or a pretty good engine to that golf swing, I think you're going to see a lot of results that not only are good in the short term, but also are more sustainable downriver.
Webb, you teach a lot of good juniors up there in Raleigh, but you teach a lot of members and recreational golfers, folks coming to see you. What are some of the things that you have learned using force plates and your conversations with all of us that have helped you? Like, where are some of your go-to things that you start with players on these force
plates? I think you guys hit the nail on the head. I think it all has to start with setup, though. And that's what I use. I use force plates a ton for setup, just looking at balance. I mean, I did a clinic last week, and it was amazing. This guy, I mean, he's set up with all his pressure on his toes, club whirled inside, slammed it over the top. All I did was get his pressure even at setup, and it almost seemed like the club would start to plane out. Like, it was ridiculous how much better it planed out. And to hit on your guys' point, I think if you teach the body, because I always consider the body being the bully of the golf swing. Like, the body's going to bully your arms and hands. So why not we get the body in order? Because I see people all day come in my bay. I'm going to see if I can get the camera here. You know, they're all always up here at four looking at their hands and all that stuff. And I was like, what are you doing? And then I see that guy with his perfect hand position, and he slides the hips out to the right. You know, he starts to stack the spine to the left, and he's looking at his hands. I'm like, well, you look ridiculous. He's like, and then he's sitting there trying to tell me, well, I'm trying to get, you know, my position proper here so I can shallow out. And I was like, oh, well, why don't you just get in a better position at the top with your body? And it's amazing how that club will start to plane out if we just get the body in a perfect orientation at the top.
Michael, too, it never ceases to amaze me. Like, a lot of the stuff I do with Colby and stuff there at Old Palm, and how much you can clean the top up by getting a person more balanced, like you said, Webb, and starting to turn and wind their center better going back. Like, it's amazing how much of that crap that people don't like is because they didn't wind up correctly going back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a big problem for people too, in my experience with force plates and being a golf coach kind of first and foremost before I kind of turn into this sciencey guy, is, you know, the great debate within our industry is what moves what? Does the club move the body or does the body move the club? We've been debating this stuff for years. And I think the confusion stems from when we move the club initially, when we do our take back with our golf swing, when we accelerate the mass of the golf club, the golf club creates a force. And that force does act upon our body. So really, when we're going through this loading phase, I know I keep talking about this loading, but I call it creating the action force so that we can get the reaction forces we want. I think calling it pressure is not doing it service, so I just call it the action force. But if I do a good job of countering the golf club and the loading phase, then I got a chance with this thing the rest of the swing. But when I just let that thing rip back and I let the forces of the club kind of tell my body what to do, that's when I start getting into all these weird positions and have to start countering throughout transition in the downswing. Mm-hmm. And that's where you start seeing golfers really struggle the most, in my opinion.
Agree. And I mean, I think just helping people understand it. And I think, again, I said this on another, on a podcast I had last week with Charlie Hume from the Smiley Show. And we were talking about, like, I think one thing that people overlook is they don't oftentimes take the time to slow down and make sure the student understands what's really needing to happen. I think sometimes people gloss over it, assume the student knows what's going on and all of that. And like you just started talking about what moves the club and all of that. Like, I mean, sitting there and explaining that stuff to them is powerful, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people are doing what they do because they don't understand really what's the best way or what's the most efficient way, or they've heard things like pressure shift or getting behind the ball, those things. And I mean, like, so they slide all the way over there. They think, well, shit, I'm behind the ball, right?
Yeah.
They don't understand mm-hmm. the difference between loading, like you're talking about, and other things.
It's funny because last week at the PGA merchandise show, in all honesty, the only reason I went was because Smart to Move was nice enough to ask me to present for them. Which I wanted to do. And I had this presentation all worked up and I was going to sound super smart and show everybody just how smart I was. But to your point, I went to use the restroom about 15 minutes before I presented. I'm standing there at the urinal and it just dawned on me. Most of the people that I'm going to communicate with and talk to and present to don't have the background of force plates like we do. They haven't spent any time with this. And I really scrapped the presentation I was going to give and really just tried to talk to the people based off where they were. And like you said, you got to, I hate to say it this way, and I'll probably get beat up for this, but you just have to treat every student like they don't know anything and take them A to Z. And the better job you do with that, at least now you know that you're communicating from the same place. Because so many people come in and they want to sound cool and they know the buzzwords and they see a ton of it on Instagram and whatever else, but you really got to help them understand, like, hey, it's cool you know all this stuff, but really this is the low hanging fruit for you. This is where we have to kind of start making hay if we can. So I think it's really important. I think it's a great point, Tony, that you really have to assume that they don't know what we're talking about. And you got to take the time to explain it to them, even though sometimes it feels painful and tedious to us. But hey, I mean, that's the business, is helping our players play better. And if they don't know where we're coming from or what we're talking about, how do we expect them to do better?
So we're going to move on to speed, right? I think, you know, we're talking loading and pivot, and nobody comes to us and says they want to hit it shorter. I did have one guy one time. He was a weird dude. But anyways, could hit it crazy far, lost like 12 balls on the golf course, whatever. But anyways, another story. But but most people want to hit it further. I'm not huge on like speed training. That's not my deal. My philosophy has always been to build a good pivot, get a good club face, and then let Colby or somebody make them stronger and bigger and faster, and then improve and to keep improving. Right. But like, when you have, what are some of you guys, like, we get recreational golfers, Where do you guys go to help people, you know, to add speed?
Let it rip, Ryan.
Well,
I'm gonna quote
the famous Mark Hackett here, because I think a lot of speed conversation has been misconstrued. And I think this was a great quote by Hack. And we were talking about this one day, and I was just asking, I was like, where does speed come from? And Hackett said, you ever see the hips blur out on the camera? And I thought that was brilliant. And then I was like, obviously, I said no. And he goes, well, what blurs out on the camera? I was like, well, your hands and the club head do. He goes, well, that's where your speed's generated from. So he would always talk about the release was in the hands was where a lot of speed was generated. And I always thought that was a brilliant way to put it. Obviously, you got to apply all the proper forces in the proper sequences, and you got to start to get all that lined up too. But I don't think enough people talk about the hands for speed as well.
Michael, yeah, how do you teach release? To me, is always a tricky one, and I think you got to, there's a lot of people that release it way early and incorrectly. Well, how do you teach release? What are your thoughts on that?
Was that for me or Ryan, Tony?
You.
Okay. Oh, you're going to throw me under the bus on release. Okay. So I basically just try to help people understand that when you set up to, whether you're a righty or a lefty, the forward shaft lean is built into the golf club. So when you have forward shaft lean, there's going to be some extension in your trail wrist. And I'm a firm believer of getting people to understand that when you lose the extension of the trail wrist, you shut the face. That's how that works. So my big thing is always teaching people to deliver the club for yes. extension of their trail wrist.
Yes.
Now, there's a lot of people out there in the golf space that don't like that, but that's really what it has to be. And for most people that don't get left, they can't release through extension, because when they don't get left, they run out of right arm, and now they have to go through flexion of the right wrist. And that's where you start seeing the shut face. I think mm-hmm. you've said it brilliantly, Tony. When it comes to speed, when it comes to precision, when it comes to all these things, the club face still to this day is the great regulator of these things.
Yep.
If you got somebody with a shut face in transition, they're never going to make good speed, because they're not going to pivot and rotate through the shot when the face is already shut. The nervous system's not that dumb. So for a lot of people, we've got to teach them how to get the face, in my opinion, opening through extension and transition. And now there's a reason to actually turn and rotate through the shot, because we got to close the face. But so many people that are, like you said, kind of swaying way off the ball and way back here trying to deliver, they're going to have to find flexion in that wrist. And that's where that face goes shut, and they're in all kinds of trouble.
Well, I think a lot of people that don't turn and load, don't turn, and they shift, roll the face back because something's got to make the club go around.
Yep.
Right? They do it with that. That goes perfectly, Webb, with what you said earlier about like getting them in posture, and then the club could start working.
Mm-hmm.
Turning, the club starts working more up the plane, and then they get the face way open, and then they got to have time. You know, they've got to try to shut it. You know, I'm big on, I love what you said about the wrist. I don't know if you remember the old great golf machine teacher, Tom Ness, Michael.
Yeah. He
passed away a couple months ago and was at his funeral. But one of his best sayings to me ever, I texted him a video of a guy who, another teacher had said he had too much lag, and he said, you can never have too much lag, too much money, or too big a dick. And right. And I've never forgot that. Right. Now you may have to, but I think, you know, and again, I'm not a proponent of shoving the handle through, but right. That's to me, those are people with an ineffective pivot.
I agree. Yeah, 100%.
I agree.
Right.
100%.
Right. And so if you have a good pivot, then to me, you want to leave that in there long enough so you can keep turning.
Absolutely.
Right?
100%. I mean, I think it goes back to a conversation too. And so many of the guys that came before us were brilliant, but they were solving a different game. We used to play with a Bellotta golf ball, right? That had a theoretical limit of somewhere around 165, 170 miles an hour. And the thing only wanted to go straight up in the air and spin. So back in the day, it made way more sense. You couldn't hit it that hard. 165. I just had a 15-year-old kid in here that can do 170 if he wants to. So like, that's not world class in terms of ball speed, but it made sense back in the day to kind of hang back more and drag the handle and deal off the club, because that's how we got it to go somewhere back in the day. But now we're playing with this urethane ball that wants to go 230 miles an hour. And what do we see tour players doing now? Well, now they all got 10.5 degree drivers because they need loft again, because they need to create spin. So I just think that the modeling has to change, and I don't think we need to throw all the old golf books away. I think there's a lot of good stuff there, but I think we also, like Webby was saying earlier, I think we have to keep in mind that the golf swing is one thing, but how we transfer that energy and create that energy, and most importantly, for the health and longevity of our players, break that speed is crazy important. And I think it's more so important now than it's ever been with this chase for speed, which I also agree with Webb, I think is kind of a crazy concept.
Well, I also think that what people don't understand, and feel free to chime in, but if you create a bunch of speed, just there create speed, and you're not strong enough, stable enough, or mobile enough in your lead side or your trail side, like especially your lead side, to break and to withstand it, you're either A, going to hit it shitty, or B, you're going to hurt yourself. So just swinging a thing with a weight on it and going, I'm getting faster, right, isn't going to make you a better golfer if you're not able to load and you're not physically able to do it and you're not strong enough, stable enough, mobile enough in the lead side to break and deliver the club, then you're going to make yourself worse.
It was so funny. I was just with a player, maybe the worst handle dragger I've ever seen. I was on the road, been on the road quite a bit this month, but I was on the road and was working with this player, maybe the worst handle dragger I've ever seen. Just no speed, no speed at all. Hit these like low little laser beams, just dragging the handle all day long. And the only thing he wanted, he told me, he goes, "Look, the only thing I want is to hit it farther. I want to see the club speed go up. I want to see the ball speed go up." I go, "Okay, great, fine. If that's what you want, that's what we'll do." So he's trying to pull this thing so hard from the top. He's got this really deliberate slow backswing, trying to pull it and put all the energy in at the top. And this is something that John Tattersall actually turned me on to, who's great with the force plates. But the speed goes in the initial take back. That's where we put the speed in the swing. And I got this guy to really ramp up his speed in his backswing and really snatch this club back a lot faster. He gained almost 12 miles an hour of club speed, not ball, club speed, just speeding up his backswing. But that goes back to your conversation where we have to have the mobility and the stability and the trail side in order to ramp that speed up that way. Now, was he very uncomfortable doing that? You betcha, because that went against everything he believed to be true. But the funny thing was, is the first one he didn't hit very well, I'll be honest. But the second one he flushed and he's like, "I can't believe I felt that uncomfortable that fast and still hit it." Once again, the nervous system will sort a lot of this out for us if we put it in a position to where it can do its thing.
Well, I agree. And I always tell folks, I do a lot of stuff here. I go demonstration again. I'm on a roll today, Webb. You
You
brought up
are. You're all
best.
fired
Tony,
up.
I got some clubs too. I want to jump in here.
But if you can't stand on one leg and balance yourself and make a pivot at a mile an hour, how do you expect to go 100 and some miles an hour, why go rearing back into that leg and stay balanced and be able to drive off of it and deliver the club? Not going to happen.
No chance.
If you
Right?
can't do it, if you can't do it fast, or if you can't do it slow, why would you do it fast?
Right,
Agreed.
exactly. That's a good rule. And that's a good clip there, Webb. That's good. That's
I mean, it
good.
makes sense, right?
Yeah.
The thing too that's funny is like, so many people come to me and they want to know, they're like, "Well, what do you do with people on force plates?" And one of my first questions is always like, "Well, what's the bottom of their foot look like?" And they're like, "What do you mean, what's the bottom of their foot look like? Well, what's the arch of their foot look like?" Because if you're like me, I have very flat feet. Like it's kind of sad, but my arch almost hits the ground. I've been this way my whole life. But if I have a really flat arch, my
You ought to
foot
try a
isn't gonna,
Stay-K. Stay-K fix that.
Stay-Ks will
Michael,
fix that. But if I have a really flat foot, my foot wants to twist like this. It doesn't want to create that AP like we were talking about earlier. But if I have a high arch, well, now all of a sudden my foot doesn't want to twist very much and it wants to create that AP. So I think a big part of golf instruction moving forward is we need the Colbys of the world who understand the anatomy really well and can help us dumb golf coaches kind of figure out some of these pieces. But I've seen so many people, before I understood how this arch affects things, trying to get them to rip it back. Well, if their foot can't hold that force that we're trying to put into it, it's not going to work either. So once again, like you were saying, you see that person that can't stand on one leg and can't pivot a little bit and kind of balance themselves. That's when I'm always like, "Well, kick your shoe off and let's see what that looks like." And now we might need, a slightly different solution for that person based off what the foot looks like.
Awesome stuff here. We're going to shift real quick. Michael Dutro, Ryan Webb joining me here on the Tour Coach Podcast. Last piece, short game. I'm not going to get into all the East-West wars and people taking shots at you or whatever, but I think it's interesting to see what you found on force plates with short game, because I'll be honest. I mean, I do have some people hit some chips or pitches. Generally, it's slowing them down for something full swing, right? So just very curious what you found. Now, I teach – look, first of all, I think I'm going to put this disclaimer out. My opinions on the whole thing are, is I think great players and the best chippers and short gamers do a combination of all things based on what the lie is, the shot is, and what they need to, because they're really fucking good, okay? And they're really good, and they got great hands. Now, you know, I personally think, just me, if we're taking a 5, a 10, a 15, 20 handicapper, if the motion I'm teaching them helps them hit it solid and it also helps improve their golf swing because it helps them get a little more rotation, for me, that's a better way to go. What have you found on the force plates with the research you've done with short game? And I know you've done a bunch of stuff with Short Game Chef. Parker's awesome. He's been on this. I love listening to him. I love watching his shit. I think he's awesome. Curious what you found.
I love Parker too. Like, I think Parker is one of the most stand-up guys in our industry.
Yeah.
I really do. And I mean that. And yeah. I could recommend anybody who wants to work on their short game to fly out to Arizona and spend some time with Chef, because he does an amazing job with that. He's had me out a lot. We've put a lot of really high-end players, including himself, on the plates and kind of looked at what he does. But, you know, the theory that I had, which is kind of has really been true, is that we're not trying to create that moment arm when we're pitching and chipping the ball. Because when we're pitching and chipping the ball, we're trying to slow the ball down. We're not trying to speed the ball up. So we don't really need this moment arm. And that's where I think Mr. Mayo's thing is fine too. Like, hey, you know, staying more left. Well, if I don't move any pressure into my trail side, I don't create that moment arm. So I think they're fine. My only kind of thing that I always try to tell players is, hey, we've got to be able to be very variable when it comes to short game. You're going to have a lot of different lies. You're going to have a lot of different conditions. The pen's on the front, it's on the middle, it's on the back. You're going to have to be able to hit a multitude of different golf shots when it comes to short game. Like, that's a fact. Now, when we're talking about having to hit a lot of different shots with an open face, with a square face, with a half open, whatever the case may be, when we're talking about that, then low point really becomes important. And that's where I think that a lot of golfers get in trouble, because it's funny enough, in the full swing, you can't get a golfer to want to use their body very much. But then we put a wedge in their hands and they got a little chip and they want to move their body everywhere. So yeah. I really am trying to use the force plates to really almost create a way more stable base. And if I give them a stable base and I quit separating that center of pressure from that center of mass, now all of a sudden I've given them a chance to understand where low point's going to happen. And now they can rely on their hands and their nervous system and all these other things to kind of manufacture the shot that they need. So I wouldn't say that I've really learned anything is right or wrong, but I have learned that people that tend to kind of want to move a lot in the short game tend to really have low point issues. And anytime we have low point issues, we're going to struggle with the chipping and pitching of the ball.
Agree. I think, you know, I'm not a big lean person on the left leg, because not that I've never done it, and I've had success doing it with players.
Yeah, of course.
Right. Because there's people that needed it. I go by the old saying though, it's you can't shut a shut door. Right. So if you don't have a little turn back, you don't have anywhere to go. That's just my preference. But again, I think, again, as teachers, we have all these different methods and all these different tools, and our job is to fit it to the person in front of us. And I think we should never get too far away that the real object and the real goal of doing what we do is to help the person in front of us, not for us to be right.
Yeah, you know? I think it's way more important for us to get it right than to be right. And that's always been my position in the whole thing is, you know, I've had the privilege, and I do mean privilege, of watching Parker work with players, lots of players, good players, bad players, you name it. I've seen him work with them. And he doesn't care what the quote unquote recipe is for that person. He's just going to do what they need to do. And, he's tossing people some stuff that I maybe didn't agree with in the moment. And I was like, well, let's see how this plays out. And I'll be damned if it didn't work. Just like I've seen some people where we've done the things that we think are supposed to work, not work at all. And we've had to backtrack that and try it a different way. So I think when it comes to short game shots, we're not trying to hit the ball far. We're not really trying to do anything too fancy. And it really, we almost need to do less than more. And that's where I kind of always try to slow things down with them and go, hey, let's get this body to quit moving around because we don't need to create all this speed. So like we don't need the body as much. And let's like figure out where low point is and then kind of work back from there. And then you can teach them to add loft or whatever the case needs to be. But generally speaking, I think trying to use the body in the short game, it's a rough proposition for most, because most, in my experience, are using way too much body in the short game.
Especially when they get to leaning and sliding and all that stuff.
For sure. No,
Yeah.
yeah, but the more left I go as setup, it's going to force me back.
Correct.
Right? Like, I mean, you can't. That's the number one myth in golf, in my opinion, is the idea that something stays static, that there's this fixed point somewhere on the human anatomy that doesn't move during the golf swing. It's completely untrue, in my opinion. I mean, hopefully nothing stays static, because if it does, you're probably not very good at golf.
I mean, and again, I've done this with people before and it works. But I'm saying that, like, sometimes if you get a person lean too far over there, one of people's biggest fears is getting the ball in the air,
Yeah.
right? Well, oftentimes, in my opinion, like, if you get somebody lean too far over there, granted, you got to explain low point and all that, but their instincts are to go that way to try to create lift, right?
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong. And I think that you look at guys like, obviously, Joe's had tremendous success with what he's doing with chipping and with full swing. He's unbelievable with that stuff. But Parker has too.
Yeah. And Parker's also won himself on tour. He's a tour
Yeah.
winner.
So, right. So, and also, there are guys that are great chippers, pitchers of the ball that don't do textbook shit that we would teach, but they're really, really good, and they figured out how to get the ball in the hole, which is ultimately what we're trying to do.
100%. And I think, the other thing around short game that drives me crazy is, if we're talking about stopping power, we've all like had that shot on 18. The members are all out there having their drinks and their meals, and we want to zip one in there and throw the brakes. And that looks really cool. And that gets you a little applause from the deck there. But at the end of the day, when we're talking about stopping power, it's a combination of spin and land angle. And like you were saying, golfers, generally bad golfers, really don't want to get the ball in the air when it comes to these little short shots around the green or these pitches around the green. And like the biggest thing that I'm always trying to talk to golfers about when it comes to short game is like, how's this ball going to land coming into the green? Like, tell me what that looks like. And it's almost like we're reverse engineering the shot a little bit, going from where it lands to how we're going to hit it and all those things. But, if you can increase somebody's land angle with these chips and pitches, they're going to have more stopping power and they're going to be able to get the ball closer to the hole, assuming they're not trying to hit like a bump and run that releases back to the hole. So I think that's one of the numbers that nobody really talks about, but I think is very, very important when it comes to short game.
I love it. Love it. Guys, this was great. We need to do this more often. Dutro, we need to bring you on more often and get into the weeds a little bit on some of the science and stuff. You're so much better at that than I am. And Webb, man, you're doing awesome over there. Everybody, real quick, Webb, give out your Instagram, best way for people to find you.
Yes, Ryan Webb Golf on Instagram.
Boy, that was new. I wouldn't have guessed that one. Go ahead, Dutro, let everybody know how to find you.
You can find me at the Force Plate Guy, or you can find more of our stuff. We have a podcast, YouTube, all that fun stuff, and you can find that by searching measuredgolf.com.
Awesome stuff, guys. And everybody here knows, go see the Dew Sweeper. We'll talk to you. We'll see everybody next week. Guys, have a great week teaching. Appreciate the input. Keep up all the great work, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah,
Thank you,
thanks,
Tony.
Tony.
And don't forget, everybody here, you need a staycay.
Stay K.